The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Man, first weekend with no football. Oh, God, it's always so depressing. It's really difficult to actually find something to watch, especially when it's just, you know, the All-Star break for the NBA. And, you know, like I said last week, wasn't really interested in the All-Star game, and there wasn't really anything of interest. I mean, I didn't watch it at all, but it doesn't sound like anybody was really impressed, especially with the slam dunk contest. But Steph Curry, he did have a great game. It was kind of hilarious to hear that he got booed when they gave him his introduction. He ended up being the MVP of the game, dropping 16 three-pointers for 50 points. So, he shut them up real quick. So that's pretty funny to hear. But other than that, I mean, it wasn't, it was an All-Star game. So they're not usually that great. Let's see. So I guess since we're talking basketball, might as well start off with my top 10 NBA power rankings. Since there were some games last week right before the All-Star break, and we had some really good games last week, and a little bit of movement on my power rankings here. Not in the top spot, of course. I mean, the top spot still belongs to the Phoenix Suns at 48-10. They've won 7 in a row, and they're 9-1 overall in their last 10 games. They did get some bad news this week. Chris Paul, their starting point guard, he's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks with a broken thumb. So we'll see if they're able to weather that storm. They are a good team overall. I mean, even beyond Chris Paul, but he is the guy who keeps it flowing there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Suns over the next about month and a half, 2 months here, because 6 to 8 weeks, that's a long time for Chris Paul to be missing. So we'll see what happens there. But so far right now, the Suns are still my top team in the league. The number two team on my top 10 NBA power rankings this week is actually the Memphis Grizzlies. They were able to move up above the Warriors. They're 41-19 right now, and they're 8-2 in their last 10 games. Both them and the Warriors did get a couple losses last week, but the Grizzlies are just playing excellent basketball, and they played slightly better than the Warriors did last week. So that's what bumped them up into the second spot this week. Then at number three, just bumped down, was the Golden State Warriors. They're 42-17. They've lost two straight, so they're 6-4 overall. They've kind of cooled off a little bit, but not where I'm going to drop them dramatically in my power rankings up to this point, at least. Then number four on my top 10 NBA power rankings, who have actually shot right up, is the Boston Celtics. They're 34-26, and they're 9-1 in their last 10 games. They're the hottest team in the NBA right now. They're playing some excellent basketball. Jason Tatum continues to dominate. And they're playing some great defense, and they're scoring, and they're beating some good teams too. So I had to bump them up in my power rankings, and so they're sitting at number four right now. Then number five on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I've got the Chicago Bulls. They've somehow managed to make their way back up into my power rankings after dropping out a couple weeks ago, but they're on a 5-game winning streak. 7-3 in their last 10 games, and DeRozan's just having a spectacular season. I've always thought he was a good basketball player, but I didn't think he was this good. I felt like his time in Toronto, it was mostly Kyle Lowry who was the dude up there, but he's proven he's actually an excellent player, and he's really turned things around for the Chicago Bulls this season. Even through the injuries, he's still the dude, and he's actually an MVP candidate this year, at least up until this point. So that bumps the Bulls up to number five this week. The number six on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Denver Nuggets. They're on a 3-game winning streak right now. They're 33-25, 6-4 over their last 10 games. And they just seem to be getting hotter each and every week. And they're playing at the caliber basketball that we're used to seeing. So I've got them at number six. Number 7 on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Dallas Mavericks, 35-24. They've won 2 in a row right now, and they're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They're playing solid basketball. They're not gonna blow you out of the water, but they're silent but deadly, and they're a force to be reckoned with. At least for right now, they are. And you know, Doncic is getting better with each and every week, so they're playing great right now. Then number 8 on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I had the Miami Heat. They're 38-21 overall with a 6-4 record in the last 10 games. They're the top team in the Eastern Conference still at this point. So you know I had to get them in there. Then number 9 on my top 10 NBA power rankings is Utah Jazz. They're 36-22, 6-4 in their last 10 games. They got Rudy Gobert back this week, which was a huge boost to the team. You know, Donovan Mitchell came back a couple weeks ago, and so now that they got Gobert back, basically their team is healthy, or as healthy as they can be, and ready to go for the second half. So it should be interesting to see what the Jazz are able to do with this second half. But they are number 9 this week in my top 10 NBA power rankings. And rounding out the top 10 are the Philadelphia 76ers, 35-23 overall. They had an up and down week last week. They got their asses beat in one game, but then they came back and won in the next one. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. You know, Joel Embiid is still having a great season. So they are number 10. It's something that was also interesting that happened during All-Star Weekend this week was since it's the 75-year anniversary of the NBA, they had a 75-year anniversary team, and a bunch of the players who were, nominated for that for the 75-year anniversary team, they came out and they were honored at halftime. And something that was very interesting is Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett still ignore Ray Allen. So it's kind of weird that they still got this bad blood, from a few years ago when, the Boston Celtics in the late 2000s, kind of, like that 2005 to 2010-ish period, the Boston Celtics were the best team out East. And, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, and Kevin Garnett, they were the focal points of that Boston Celtics team. And they did end up winning a championship, unfortunately beating my Los Angeles Lakers in 2008. But they were a great team, and they had some great chemistry. But Ray Allen ended up going to the Miami Heat and signing with them and winning a championship or two. Yeah, I think he won 2 with that out there with them. But he definitely won 1, and he was the reason why they did win one of them. He made the big clutch shot game 5, game 6 against the Spurs, and to extend that series, and the Heat ended up winning that series, something which the Spurs were going to easily take that series, and then boom, Ray Allen changed the entire narrative of that series, and the Heat ended up getting that championship. But ever since then, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett have had issues with Ray Allen, and they seem to always ignore him and kind of not include him in, reunions they've had over the years, which is just really odd. But I guess they were apparently really pissed off. And still last night, they didn't even make eye contact with him. He walked right by them, and they just kept staring straight forward, didn't give him a smile, didn't give him a nod, didn't give him a high five, didn't even glance in his direction. So that was kind of crazy to see that grudge still holds true with those three guys. And then, of course, since the All-Star game was in Cleveland, the weekend for some reason had to revolve all around LeBron James, and he had to be involved in every interview. We had to get his opinion on every single fucking thing in the world because it's LeBron. And so one thing that he kept talking about hit the future and where he may end up, and he was saying that he's leaving the door open to play with the Cavaliers again. And his last season, he definitely wants to play with his son, Bronny. If he gets drafted in the NBA, that's where wherever his son gets drafted, that's the team he wants to play with. And it's just kind of funny because apparently some Laker fans are kind of shocked by this, and they really actually thought LeBron James was going to retire a Laker. Now, I never thought that for one second. I assumed he'd come here for a couple years, maybe like 3, 4, 5 years. I assumed he might win a championship, which he did back in 2020. So he basically did his job. But I never thought for one second that LeBron James was going to retire a Laker. And the reason why is just because LeBron's never been loyal to a team. Now, when I'm talking about LeBron's loyalty, by the way, in this segment, I'm talking about his loyalty to teams in the NBA. I don't know anything about his personal life, so I can't speak to his loyalty with his friends and family. I'm specifically only talking about his time in the NBA. And so, if you notice, he's never been loyal to anybody. Even when he first was drafted by Cleveland, he, of course, you know, wanted to be the dude from Akron to bring them a championship. And his first time there, he ended up taking them to the finals, but then leaving and going to Miami. And then when he went to Miami, he went there for 4 years. Then we went back to Cleveland. And then now he's with the Lakers. And so that just shows you right there, he doesn't have loyalty along the way. I mean, hell, he doesn't even have loyalty with teams that he roots for. Like one year, he's a Cowboys fan. The next year, he's a Yankees fan. Then this year, he's a Browns fan. Then all of a sudden, he's a Rams fan. It's like he doesn't have loyalty to any team. So if you thought for 1 second that LeBron was going to have loyalty to the Lakers, he was never going to. You know, and he doesn't have to either. I'm not saying he has to. It's just I find it amusing that there are some Laker fans who actually thought he was going to end his career with the Lakers. I thought that's kind of a pipe dream. I didn't know where he was going to end his career, but I didn't really think it was going to be with the Lakers. I kind of assumed he was going to come to L.A., win at least one championship, which he has done. And I didn't think he was going to help us build for the future. I didn't think he was going to make our future any better. I knew he was going to decimate any future draft picks we may have. I knew he was going to get players he didn't like traded away. And that's why the Lakers are where they are right now. And so, I never thought for 1 second that he was going to be retiring a Laker. I don't really even look at him as a Laker. I mean, I'm happy for what he's done as a Laker. And he is a great player. I'm not even trying to discredit that. I'm just saying the dude's never been loyal to any team. So let's not act like he's about to start now that he's a Laker. He doesn't view being a Laker the same way a Kobe Bryant did or a Magic Johnson did. That's just not the way he operates. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, he's obviously had a successful career and will have a successful post-career. He's made great business moves, so you can't hate on anything he's done. But I don't understand why any Lakers fans would be shocked that he's not interested in retiring as a Laker. And hell, it's weird that he's even like discussing being with other teams when he's still currently playing a season and playing with the Lakers right now. And there's some scuttlebutt that this is just kind of him speaking through the media, which he does on occasions, to the Lakers front office. And it's like, dude, just if that's what it is, just shut the fuck up. Nobody fucking cares anymore. And I just hate that shit. But whatever's going on there, I don't understand why you're talking about your future in the NBA when we still have a season to go. That I just think that's kind of weird. But whatever. That's LeBron. LeBron being LeBron. All right, and then let's move on to college basketball. There actually was something noteworthy that did happen in college basketball this weekend. Unfortunately, it doesn't revolve around like a game-winning shot or a great game. It actually revolves around two coaches getting into a physical altercation. Now, you know, there have been many times in the past where coaches have lost their cool. So this isn't like the first time something like this has happened. And I wouldn't say it's even anything like something that you should look at and be like, oh my God, that was so scary or upsetting. No, it was just two guys who were pissed off in the moment and just took it to another level where it shouldn't have gone. But basically, Michigan was playing Wisconsin this weekend, and Michigan was getting their asses beat. So I guess that's what they were really upset about. But the coach of Wisconsin, I guess, took a timeout, and that upset the Michigan coach, Juwan Howard. And so as the game ends, they're going to the handshakes, and the two coaches kind of start getting in each other's face. And they are both grabbing each other, nothing like really egregious, but they are both grabbing each other. So they are both at fault for this. And there's nobody to really blame. I don't think either one of them is worse in this case. As a matter of fact, I think they should both be suspended for the rest of the season, including the NCAA championship, if that's where they end up going. But basically, both of the coaches were kind of in each other's face. They were grabbing at each other. And then people started getting in the way, pushing them apart from each other. And Juwan Howard, the coach of Michigan, ends up taking a swing. Nothing like crazy, just like a little swing, kind of hits an assistant coach, Joe Krabenhoff, whatever the fuck his name is. But basically that kind of little scuttlebutt ensues, and nothing really, no like Ron Artest moment happens. But, you know, it was kind of weird to see two coaches going at it like this. I mean, you are the coaches, so you are held to a completely different standard and a completely different level. Because now, how are you going to tell your team to keep their cool when they lose their cool? If you're taking swings at the other coach just because he's calling timeouts, because I get it, it's a quote sportsmanship thing. But at the end of the day, how about you not be losing that bad, and maybe it wouldn't look so bad. I'm sorry, you don't get to tell the other team how to strategize. And yeah, you may be upset, but there are other ways to handle it, and throwing punches is not the way to handle it. And also, two grown men shouldn't be laying hands on each other like that. They shouldn't have been grabbing at each other. And it really did become a spectacle this weekend. There were some people who were completely overreacting to it, acting like Juwan Howard should be fired from his job. I don't think he should be fired. Like I said, I think both coaches should be suspended for the rest of the season. If either team makes it to the tournament, I think they should be suspended for then. And that's it. Neither one of them should be fired. They should both be held accountable, because they both were at fault. And they both looked stupid as hell, and they just looked dumb. Two grown-ass men acting like two grown-ass bitches is what they looked like. So they looked stupid, and that's all there really is to say about that. But other than that, now let's get to the college basketball top 10 teams. Not much of a shakeup. The bottom 10, there's a little bit of a shakeup, but the top, you know, it's number one, still Gonzaga at 23-2. There's a little bit of movement here at 2 and 3. Arizona bumped up to the number 2 spot. They're 24-2, and Auburn dropped down to the number 3 spot because they took a loss this week to Florida, just by 1 point though. So their overall record's now 24-3. Purdue bumped up a spot. They're 24-4. Kansas is at number 5. They're 22-4. Number 6 spot's Kentucky at 22-5. Duke bumped up a couple spots to number 7. They're 23-4. Villanova bumped up a couple spots to 8. They're 21-6. The biggest movement in the top 10 this week is Texas Tech bumped up a couple spots into the top 10. They're number 9. They bumped up 2 spots, and they're 21-6. And then rounding out the top 10, Baylor dropped 3 spots all the way down to the 10 spot, and they're 22-5 overall. Longhorns didn't play that great last week. They lost 1-1-1, but they're still at number 20. At 19-8. Although the baseball team did have a great weekend. They went 3-0 against Rice this weekend. So Texas Longhorns baseball is starting the season off right. All right, and you know, like I said, since we're in football purgatory, I decided I'm going to go over NFL team needs each and every episode until we're done with the teams. And so this week, I did want to go ahead and start with the NFC East and the AFC East, and just kind of talk about what these teams are going to need for the offseason, and their draft position, and some of the notable free agents from each team that they're going to be losing, and just to just kind of discuss what the future may hold for each one of these teams. Also, some NFL news before I get into this. Brian Flores, the ex-coach of the Miami Dolphins, who is suing the league right now, actually did get hired this week as a linebackers coach with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So he's obviously not a head coach, but he's still going to be in the league, and he's still going to be getting a chance. So that's good for him, and good to hear, and actually not shocking that it's with the Pittsburgh Steelers, because they're a team that usually gives people a chance when others won't. But anyways, let's go ahead and start off with NFL team needs. We're going to go ahead and start off with the NFC East, because the Dallas Cowboys are my favorite team, and they're in the NFC East, so that's where we're going to start. with my Dallas Cowboys. They are in the right now in the first round of the draft. They are at the number 24 spot. A couple free agents that they have the potential of losing this year are Michael Gallup, Leighton Vander Esch, Randy Gregory, Connor Williams, and Dalton Schultz. Out of all of them, I would really like to see, honestly, I'd like to see four of the five back. I couldn't care less about Connor Williams. The dude is Holder McGee. He's holds on every single fucking penalty, or every fucking play, it seems like. And it's just, I'm so sick and tired of hearing his name called when it's a penalty, and that's pretty much usually it. He's not a horrible offensive lineman, but the penalties have killed him, in my opinion, and so I couldn't care less if we re-sign him. I would love to see us re-sign Gallup, Vander Esch, Gregory, and Schultz, but I don't think it's feasible to see that we're going to re-sign all of them. If I could see any one of them come back, definitely Randy Gregory and Dalton Schultz. Just both of them flourished last year. You could tell Schultz has been building a repertoire with Dak, and Randy Gregory just balled out last year. So I would like to see us re-sign the two of them. I would also like to see Gallup back, but at the same time, he is injury prone, and this is a good year to get wide receivers, whether it be through free agency or the draft. So if we lose Gallup, I don't think it would be as big of a deal. And then Vander Esch, it's kind of the same thing. I love Vander Esch ever since we drafted him, but he's also been injury prone his entire career. And we are pretty stacked at the linebacker position, and it actually keeps getting better. And I wouldn't be shocked if we were able to find another linebacker in this year's draft. So like I said, Randy Gregory and Dalton Schultz are the two that I'd prefer we sign out of all of them. But those are the potential free agents. Where I think the Cowboys need to improve on their team this year is overall they are a good team. But on the defensive side of the ball, they could use some help in the secondary, whether it be at the safety position or the cornerback position. Trayvon Diggs had a breakout year last year. It's going to be difficult for him to duplicate what he did last year, but I think he could still build off of it. And if we get him some help back there, maybe get like another shutdown corner or a nice safety back there who's good at roaming the field in the back, I think that could help. We could also use some help up front, and we definitely can use some help on the offensive line. It's starting to get old, and they're starting to get injury prone. And while we do have a great offensive line, I still think we could use some help there. So that's what I think the Cowboys need going into this upcoming season. Then the Philadelphia Eagles, they are stacked this season when it comes to first-round picks. Right now, in the first round alone, the Eagles have the 15th, the 16th, and the 19th pick. So that's some good stock right there, whether they end up using all three of those picks or using them as trade bait, which I think is more likely what they will do. Is at least use one of those as some type of trade bait. But even if they don't, that's a good area to be picking. And that covers a whole lot of bases that they're going to need, because they do need to fill a lot of holes on this team. They have a great ground game. And it looks like they're going to be going with Jalen Hurts as their quarterback this season. So they're going to definitely need to get him some help. And especially on the defensive side of the ball, I think that's where they're going to need the most help. And some of their notable free agents this season are Brandon Graham, Jason Kelsey, Derek Barnett, and Anthony Harris. And I think their biggest needs are going to be, like I said, on defense. I think they could use some help at the cornerback position, the safety position, and the linebacker position. And I also think they could use some help with the wide receiver position, or maybe a tight end. Just to get Jalen Hurts some more weapons. They played pretty well this year, but if he gets another weapon or two, they could have a really solid offense. And then the Washington Commanders, they are currently at the 11th spot in the first round of the draft, and they are also another team that has a lot of needs to fill on this team. A few of their notable free agents are Brandon Scherff, which is, he's been a very consistent offensive lineman for them ever since they drafted him. And so he's probably going to be one of the top guys anybody's going after this year on the free agent market. So if they lose him, that's a big deal. Then they're also going to be losing Ryan Fitzpatrick, which I don't think is a big deal. He didn't even really play. I feel like he was just going to be a bridge anyways. And I think they got a better better shot with who they've got at quarterback now rather than Fitzpatrick. J.D. McKissick, the running back, and then John Bostic, the beast linebacker. That's another free agent out there. So, like I said, with the Commanders, they have a lot of needs. They need help at with their offensive line. They could probably use, if they're going to lose McKissick, they could use another running back. They could probably use some more help at quarterback, at least depth-wise. I think they're good at starting right now. And then they could use some help on the defensive side of the ball as well, especially at the linebacker position and the defensive back position. They got blown up in the secondary last year, so they have a shit ton of holes to fill on this team. And honestly, they're still one of those teams that's got their owner with tons of lawsuits and a ton of drama off of the field. So honestly, not that I care, but I don't really see them doing much this upcoming season just because they have so much to take care of to fix this team. And then the last team in the NFC East, the New York Giants, they currently have 2 picks in the first round, the 5th pick and the 7th pick. So once again, they're in a great spot, like just like the Eagles are. They have 2 top 10 picks. So they could definitely use one of those picks to draft someone, but then they could also use the other pick as capital to maybe get a good player or just use it as trade bait. To hopefully fill some more holes that they have on this team. Some of the notable free agents that they have on their team this year is Ingram, the tight end, Jabril Peppers, the great defensive end, and Will Hernandez, the offensive lineman. So they're losing, and those are three big guys. Ingram has had his injury issues, but when he's in the game, he's a solid tight end. So those are some 3 big names they're losing right there. And this is another team where you look at them and you're like, man, they've got so many holes to fill. Where do you start? Because is Daniel Jones going to be the quarterback of the future? It looks like he's definitely going to be their quarterback for next year. But I don't know. Who knows what they're going to do with these draft picks? And like I said, they could use one as trade bait to possibly, I don't know, if Russell Wilson happens to be available, man, you could maybe trade that fifth pick. For Russell Wilson with the Daniel Jones and maybe some other stuff there, and that changes the whole trajectory of what they're doing there. But, yeah, I don't know if Daniel Jones is going to be their future. I don't even know if he's the future for next year, even though that's what they're banking on. But they could also use some help at the offensive line position. They could use some help on the defensive line. They can use some help at the linebacker position. Basically, the Giants could use help anywhere on this team. And then moving on to the AFC East, the Buffalo Bills right now currently hold the 25th pick overall in the first round. They're losing Levi Wallace, Jerry Hughes, and Emmanuel Sanders to free agency this year. So they're not really big names. Emmanuel Sanders, while he's a solid wide receiver, it's not like he was their number one guy. The positions, I think the area that I think, the Bills need to work on the most is obviously at the running back position. And I don't know if that means they need to find another running back, maybe through free agency or the draft, or if they need to just kind of rework the game plan, but they got to do something about that ground attack. If they have a good ground attack, the Buffalo Bills are probably the most complete team in the league if they're able to get something going at the running back position. They could also use some help in the secondary and probably either at the linebacker position or on the defensive line. But other than that, the Buffalo Bills overall are an excellent team coming into next year. And I feel like if they take care of business at the running back position, or at least get something going with play calling or whatever it is they need to do with their ground game. But if they get a ground game going, they are a spectacular team. Then the New England Patriots, they're currently 21st overall in the first round. Some of their notable free agents are going to be losing are Hightower, J.C. Jackson, Trent Brown, and Devin McCourty. McCourty is definitely a big name as on their defense especially. Overall, I think where the Patriots need the most help is definitely going to be on the offense. I think they need to get Mac Jones at least another receiver or two to open up the deep ball game, because that was their biggest weakness. I don't think Mac Jones is a great quarterback by any means, but I feel like if they're able to build a solid team around him, and I mean, they've already got a good offensive line, they've got a good ground attack, and they have an okay receiving core. So that's where they need the most help. And like I said, this is the year to get a wide receiver. And so I kind of see them focusing most on that group. They're probably, if Devin McCourty leaves, they're definitely going to have to replace him in the secondary. So they're going to need some help at the cornerback position or safety position. And they could probably use some more help with the pass rush. But the biggest hole for the Patriots is definitely going to be at the wide receiver position. Then the Miami Dolphins, right now, they're picking 29th overall in the first round. And they're losing Fuller, Mike Gesicki, Austin Reeder, Jacoby Brissett, and Ogba. That's not really a lot, just because the Dolphins are just an awful team this year. They have so many holes to fill. It's going to be difficult for them to figure out what to even do or how to even improve. They need help at quarterback, they need help in the offensive line, they need help at running back, they need help at linebacker, they need help at on the defensive line. So they basically need help everywhere, and they're coming in with a rookie coach, so I don't really see them having a good season overall. I don't know when the next time the Dolphins are going to have a good season, but it's also not good with you having the 29th overall pick in the first round, because they're such a bad team that you think they would be up further in the draft, but since they made some trades over the years, some bad trades, they're drafting 29th. And then the Jets, they actually have two top 10 picks in the first round this year. They pick at number 4 and number 10. They are actually going to be losing a couple notable free agents, with Marcus May, who is one of the best safeties in the league, and then Keelan Cole and Crowder. They already are thin on offense, and so losing those two, that's going to be a big deal. Their needs are basically at every position possible besides quarterback. If they're losing Marcus May, they're going to need some help in the secondary at both cornerback and safety. They're going to need some help on the offensive line, because nobody's blocking for the quarterback. They're going to need a running back. They're going to need some help at wide receiver. They're probably going to need a tight end. They could use help basically at every single position that is available besides the quarterback. Since they just drafted Zach Wilson, they're just going to have to give him a go for a little while. I don't know what his future holds, but if they don't get him some help on the offensive line, his future is going to be on his ass for quite some time. That's what I see for both the NFC and AFC East. Just a couple of improvements and players they'll be missing this year. I'll just continue going through each and every NFL team's offseason needs and drafts and all that over the next couple of weeks to fill the void of what's going on with sports, being stuck in this sports purgatory. But you guys enjoy the week of sports, and I'll talk to you on Friday.